body power. As much a part of Irish football as spending a 9-month loan spell at Preston North End.
So, we're busy on the football show this evening. Coming up, we'll hear from Brian Kerr. He was at Old Trafford yesterday afternoon. In the meantime, we're going to talk to Gary Breen, who's standing by. Gary, hello.
Good evening.
Oh, hello, hello, hello. Are you watching an event at Anfield this evening, or what are you doing?
I've just seen the goals there, and surprised more than anything that Liverpool concede. And just, I got a little bit of a bugbear with Van Dijk in terms of how good he is. I don't know why that zonal marking, they could keep putting him to the back of the zonal marking. They've conceded a goal in and around that near post there. You think about that goal they conceded against Atletico as well. And you're just thinking, for someone so dominant, put him in the middle or at the front of the near post, not the back post, because invariably you put the corner in the near post. He can't influence it at all. It's, I don't know why they do that.
You've played zonal, I presume, at some stage down the years.
Yeah, no, listen, I've got no issues with zonal marking. Yeah. But if you think about Van Dijk in and around that centre of the six-yard box or in and around that near post, it's got to be some ball to beat him at the back post. Bearing in mind, it's got to travel further. Your goalkeeper, the rest of the team can adjust. Mm. But if it's whipped into the near post and he's standing at the back post, he can't have any influence over it. You're thinking you've got one of the best presence in a penalty box defensively and offensively, because we know how good he is there.
Yeah.
And you're not using him. It's a strange tactic, really is.
The reason I was asking, I was going to ask, where does the best player tend to stand in zonal? So it's front or middle?
Well, I think if you do your research and you're playing up against Liverpool, you've got to identify where there's a weakness. And obviously, in terms of how few goals they've conceded recently, there isn't many. Mm. But you definitely look at that near post there and think, look, put the ball in at pace, put your best headers in and around their lesser headers, and try and take Van Dijk out of the equation. Well, that's what you look to do. And if the flip side of that, again, if you were playing against Liverpool and Van Dijk was on that near post area and I was playing up against it, I'd look for one of my players just to run into him, take him under the ball, and then it's a fight between your other headers against their not so good. But why Liverpool keep doing it? Something I noticed before, and I used to think, wow, but to really see that the opposition, of course, they're seeing it. If I could notice it, then you'd expect that their scouting teams are. And that's two goals they've conceded now as a result.
Yeah, true. I presume when you're playing zonal, say you're stood at the back post, a defender, and sometimes, you know, you see a ball early and you've got the flight of it and you know it's yours and it's there to be attacked. Are you encouraged in that instance to push through? And,
oh, yeah.
If it's yours, go for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Pick the fly up at a ball. It's not about just standing still. I think zonal marking, that's the problem. Too many defenders are standing still. I'd always look to coach my teams in terms of picking up your position 2 yards further back when you actually want to end up, so that your movement is always going towards the ball. Mm. If it comes to you, you won't get done on a running jump. But I don't care how good you are, and Van Dijk is one of the best centre-halves we've ever seen. If you're standing on the back post, I don't care how quick you run to that near post, you won't get there quicker than the ball.
Yeah. Did you prefer zonal in the main or much of a mushness?
Well, listen, in terms of coaching, I think I have a preference in terms of what I want to do, but that's dictated to by the capabilities of your team. If your team's not structured, not particularly good enough at doing it, then you've got to find ways that suit them. So I'm pretty comfortable either way, to be perfectly honest.
Okay. Let's talk about the weekend that was. You were at the Emirates to watch Arsenal beat Everton 3-2 alongside Nathan. General thoughts on this?
In terms of Arsenal, a positive result for Arteta, no doubt, but the same vulnerability is still there defensively. And it's not going to be there because of the very fact he's picking the same players. And this is the problem. I mean, people are talking about prior to that Everton game, they had 3 clean sheets on the bounce. And then you start to hear things like, oh, Arteta sorted out the back four. He hasn't, because I've seen all the games, and Rodriguez should score for Burnley, hits the crossbar when he should put it in. Newcastle, who can't score for love nor money. Joe Linton has opportunities to score. Our own Kieran Clarke had a great chance against Newcastle. Olympiacos, again, in midweek in Europa League, had chances. So it's no real surprise that Everton got 2 goals. The biggest surprise, really, as I said in commentary, is that they didn't get 4 or 5.
Hmm. Aubameyang has 1 year left on his contract. Arteta conceded even afterwards. Arteta said, look, he is our most important player. There's no point beating around the bush. You know, sometimes a manager doesn't even like to acknowledge that. So he was obviously crucial yesterday. That puts him joint top Premier League scorer with 17 goals. He has reached a pivotal point in his career. If you were advising Aubameyang what to do, what would the advice be? You know, separating the affection for Arsenal, I would surely think it must be, let's go somewhere, let's get big money, find you somewhere where you'll more than likely get your game. But you can do a touch better than Arsenal would be the advice that Arsenal fans wouldn't like to hear.
Oh, listen, I'm sure they wouldn't like to hear it. But at the same time, Arsenal fans know that this is a player who is a real asset, and is a player at the top of his game that doesn't really warrant where Arsenal are right now. And that's what's so incredible about him, Joe, is that he's on 49 goals and he's going to do it in a, he's going to get to that 50 goal mark in around 74, 75 games. Now, if you think about Thierry Henry, took him 82. Ian Wright took him 87. So this is staggering. And I said yesterday, he's doing it, Aubameyang, in a team that's not a very good Arsenal team, whereas Ian Wright and Henry were two of the best Arsenal teams we've ever seen. So it's staggering what he's doing. And if you're asking me what, as an agent, I think at this stage of Aubameyang's career, I don't think he'd be dictated to by his agent. I think he'll know where he feels particularly happy. And he's adored at Arsenal. Why wouldn't he be? And I think the London situation suits him as such. And he would be on very good money. But I understand what you're saying. With a year left of his contract, they can cash in a way that Arsenal have been stung so often over the years. How they're allowing this to continue to happen, we've seen it with Van Persie. We've seen, I mean, listen, I could name loads of them, Ramsey, all these kind of guys, Sanchez even. But they'll be wary of making a mistake, thinking, well, listen, we can't give someone that money that we did to Ozil. The big difference is that Aubameyang contributes far more than Ozil ever can, because this is a player who not only has got those goals, but his work rate away from it, he really does lead by example. He's a superstar as a centre forward, and I genuinely believe that he could get into any team in the world. I really believe that.
Is there any word on what kind of character he is, what his ambitions are? It could be an interesting litmus test for Arteta.
Yeah, no, certainly. But I would have initially seen him, and he's quite flamboyant, isn't he, in terms of you see him. And I don't know if you've ever been to the Emirates, Joe, but just outside the media entrance is invariably where the players come out after the game. So the cars come out into the public, all the supporters are waiting, and he comes out in what can only be described as a Batmobile. He's that type of car he comes out with. He's so flamboyant. And you're thinking, oh, I don't know about this guy. But in terms of what he does on the pitch, leads by example. I mean, as great as he was in those runs for those goals and how brave he was for that header, you should have seen how many times he was back at left back making sliding tackles. He really is. He's a sensational player. And he's obviously the captain for a reason. I don't think you normally see players of his character or his flair as captains. But he's obviously someone who the rest of the squad or the change room looks up to, and he's leading by example. He's a brilliant player. The problem that Arsenal have is that they've got a decision to make. They haven't got enough financial muscle in terms of trying to create wealth within that squad. He's the only asset generally that they have that they could sell. But it's a massive risk, because as good as Martinelli is, they're obviously giving young Eddie Nketiah a game, two starts now in the Premier League at his young age, despite coming back from what was a difficult time at Leeds. But you can't give them the responsibility and the goals and expect them to get the goals where Aubameyang is, because even Lacazette, as an experienced campaigner, when Aubameyang was on that three-match suspension, he couldn't fill his boots.
Yeah. Briefly then on Everton, anything jumping out at you in terms of what Ancelotti has done with them?
Belief. Certainly, they felt that they could go and win that game. The problem that he will have is the timing of the goals that they conceded. Obviously, that third goal just after a minute after half time. But belief, really, anything. And what is noticeable, and you would normally associate with an Italian manager or Ancelotti, is he's going with two centre forwards. He's kind of like carrying on with what Duncan Ferguson did when he initially took over as caretaker manager. He's given Calvert-Lewin a partner, and Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison are repaying it. They really caused problems for Arsenal's defence. Listen, I know I keep saying I genuinely don't believe, despite his good character, Mustafi, in terms of coming back, he's got such a thick skin. I just don't believe he's good enough to play for Arsenal. There were so many easy runs that they were getting in with, and I think that they'll be disappointed that they didn't get more than those two goals. But Ancelotti is a serial winner, 15 major trophies in five different countries. He knows what he's doing. And I think with the money that Mashiri has got, bearing in mind they've wasted so much leading into it, I think they'll do a lot of good business this summer. I think they'll be strong.
I should tell you, West Ham have just taken the lead.
Wow.
At Anfield. It's a really good goal too as well. Declan Rice ultimately put in the cross, and it is 2-1 West Ham on 54 minutes. It looks like Fornals with the goal. He's come off the bench. It's a really good finish. I'm seeing David Moyes jumping up and down now in the replay. And 56 minutes on the clock. Liverpool 1, West Ham 2. And really, Gary, in terms of the league, that changes absolutely nothing.
Yeah, it does. And to be fair, I wouldn't be convinced it will change anything in the 90 minutes, to be perfectly honest, because how many times have we seen the opposition this season against a Liverpool team who at times the opposition must think we've got a chance here of getting something, but they never do.
Yeah.
So I expect Liverpool to come back there. Having said that, with half an hour or more, just a little bit over to go, West Ham desperately need the points. They've got horrendous fixtures coming up, a massive game against Southampton at home. If they don't win that, then they've got Arsenal, Wolves, Spurs, Chelsea. you'd fear for him, you really would.
I think City as well in there as well. Yeah, I've lost track of the run, but it's horrific. Southampton on paper was the only winnable game. So if they could even pick up a point here this evening, it would be good. They have 35 minutes to see this out. So yeah. we'll keep people up to date. Ooh, how's your threshold for VAR discussion? Can you bear it even for 4 minutes here?
No. Listen, I can do. And obviously, I was commentating on the Sheffield United-Brighton game on Saturday, and it was great to see the Irish lads playing so well. A worry for Ender Stevens coming off. But prior to that, I was obviously watching the Tottenham-Chelsea game. And I just felt, as soon as that stamping tackle happened by Lo Celso, I thought, this is just what VAR is for. To get rid of those type of challenges, to get rid of the Thierry Henry handball that cost us all those years ago, those specific things. And to get that so wrong, I just couldn't catch my breath. And I keep saying this, Joe, and this is the frustration I have, is that I don't want two referees. I just want the referee who is in charge of the game there and then to be empowered to make that decision. Just say to Michael Oliver, and he's done it this season already at Crystal Palace, just say to him, listen, go and look at the monitor and let him decide. Because as soon as he sees it, it wouldn't even take him 5 seconds to go, that's a straight red, yeah. Let's get it done. And how that chap at Stockley Park, this mythical land just outside Heathrow, cannot get that right is beyond me. And the same guy makes a mistake then on the free kick for the Manchester City-Leicester game where De Bruyne puts his hands up to block on a defensive wall.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, well, they are stonewall penalties.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that because they said that on the commentary that the bloke who was doing VAR for Leicester Man City on Saturday evening had done Chelsea Spurs that afternoon.
Exactly. You'd expect, listen, I know they're there, but you'd expect to stand him down after such a controversial decision and get it wrong. You'd expect him like any footballer, like referees, if you don't produce, you make a mistake, you come out, you're benched or whatever the saying is. They give him another high-profile game just hours later.
Yeah, so if people didn't see this, I suspect most people did because it was just one of those incidents that did the rounds even on social media. So Lo Celso stamped on Azpilicueta. He was high. It was as blatant a red card as you could
see. It's something that, and I don't really want to say this, but it's something someone who's played football, say someone like me, I can see straight away. I can see all the little telltale signs. And I'll tell you one, what's a big one. As soon as you make the stamp, you then go to the player and say, you're all right, you're okay. You try and pick him up. If you don't think you've done it, you don't do things like that. It's like when I say to you, when I used to give away a penalty, I'd go, I didn't touch him. But if I didn't touch him, why am I putting my hands up to say to the ref, I didn't touch him?
Yeah.
It's those little telltale signs. Also, that left foot just plants in the ground to give him that option then, that ability to put some real purchase when he stamps down on his right foot. It's little things like that. And now, going forward, I'm not saying that this is something they should do, but if you have someone who has played the game sitting alongside that referee, it's just another little opinion. You may argue then that will take even longer. You've got three people giving an opinion. But I think Michael Oliver, and I think I'd argue he's the best referee in the Premier League. I think he would have dealt with that immediately.
Well, isn't that the thing with that one? So there are certain instances where I have no doubt that having played the game gives you those telltale signs. Just the cute,
it's little
the
things,
cute little
yeah,
moments. And this it, wasn't it, even that. This wasn't
no,
even that.
No, you're probably right. When I say about the cute little moments, you know, like when you say about centre forwards, just they're using their arm to get up, but what they're really doing is just putting it in the centre of half's face, the elbow, and likewise centre afters. And you go, well, listen, I'm just using it to get a spring. It's those little things. But you're right. I think the most basic person who's ever seen football would be able to see that was intentional. There's no doubt about it. And I keep saying this. I just want one referee to be in charge because it's something that is in your interpretation as such. I remember being a captain, invariably you go in with the team sheets before the game, and that was an opportunity as a captain and a coach to speak to the referee, and he would say to you, listen, this is what I'm looking for in the game. And you'd say to him, listen, do you want us to talk to you? Do you want that line of communication? And if he said yes, if he said no. But I was then able to go back and say to my team, listen, this referee is going to ref it this way, and he's going to be consistent about it. And you knew where you stood. Well, you've got two people making the decision. How can you possibly expect to have the consistency?
Yeah. Frank Lampard's reaction was very instructive as well. You know, he jumped up and down. He couldn't believe it. He said afterwards, it's just not good enough. It's not good enough. I'm sorry. That's two games in a row now. It's always harder to speak about it when you've lost because people just claim you're shouting. But maybe you need to shout about it because it's just not good enough. And then he said that the PGMOL had apologised. He said, it's too late. The game's over now. I hate to call for red cards, but when they're endangering, that's a leg breaker of a tackle.
There is, Joe, it is a leg breaker. And I think even now, whenever I see those tackles, my mind immediately goes to Colin Healy having his leg broken away at Coventry for Sunderland, and the long hardship he had getting back from that, and probably never really got to the level that he was expected to as Roy Keane's heir apparent for the Irish team. So it always resonates with me when I see those type of tackles, and that is exactly what I wanted VAR to stamp out on those cowardly tackles.
Was it similar to the Healy incident? I don't remember that one.
That's a horrendous tackle by the lad there, yeah. Exactly right. That.
Okay. So, I don't understand the reluctance on the Premier League's part to dissuade the likes of Michael Oliver walking over to the screen and having a look himself. I don't understand why they are leaving it to David Coote, is the guy's name in Stockley Park. It makes less and less sense as time goes on. It adds to the frustration because the crowd, at least, if they're watching Oliver go over and look at the screen, at least they understand what's happening as opposed to just this period of silence. I think VAR in many respects is getting a hard rap. Like, too often on the radio, if there's an offside decision and it's tight, I'll listen to, you know, a report and it will say VAR denied so-and-so a goal, when in actual fact they were just offside. VAR did its job. So I think in places VAR is getting a bad rap. But the way they are forbidding the referees to go over and ref the game and empower the referees, it's not working. They really have to re-examine that in particular. And the Oliver example here at Stamford Bridge is the perfect encapsulation of that.
Yeah, no, it is. And that offside, you're quite right. You're either offside or you're not. And I know that people say about your armpit and stuff like that, that needs to be slightly adjusted. But Arsene Wenger talking about, you know, daylight and stuff like that, and ultimately, what he's just saying is that you just keep moving the line, and that's a nonsense. But it's certainly that one there. I look at that scenario and think it's the perfect example of how good VAR can be. Now, listen, we know there's going to be teething problems because with cricket, with rugby, there was as well. But it's going to take time. But that certainly needs to be adjusted because Michael Oliver is so in tune with what's happening. I think he's a brilliant referee. I really do. He would have just gone over there and seen it. Now, if he had said then that he doesn't think it is, then at least you can say for the rest of the game, okay, he's letting those challenges go. Players kind of know where they stand. But I have no doubt. I'd have no doubt he would have seen it straight away. He wouldn't even have needed to have seen it twice. Just once, and he'd have known that was a straight red.
Even just looking at Azpilicueta's leg told the story, I think. Let's go over to Anfield for just 1 second. We'll hear about this goal from Shane Pinnington.
It's Liverpool 1, West Ham United 2, and Jurgen Klopp's side with it all to do here then if they're going to extend their lead at the top of the Premier League to 22 points. And the goal come in from substitute Pablo Fornals. He's only been on the pitch a matter of 6 minutes, and his cross turned in by Fornals from Declan Rice from the right-hand side. From 12 yards out, he swept it into the left-hand bottom corner of the net. It's Liverpool 1, West Ham 2.
Liverpool, by the way, have had 20 attempts to West Ham's 3 in that game, but the scoreboard is all that counts. 2-1, 64 minutes in the clock. I do want to ask you about the game, Chelsea against Spurs. Here is, just to give you a sense, man, talk about rallying the troops here. Imagine you're in this Spurs first 11 or in this Spurs squad. Here is Jose Mourinho in his press conference afterwards. This is his summation of what's upcoming for the next 3 months.
Again, I repeat, and I think I'm going to be repetitive. I would love to be on the 1st of July. I would love to be in pre-season. I would love to be working with Harry Kane, with Sissoko, with Sonny. But that's not possible. And we have 3 long months to go in 3 competitions where we are still. It's going to be 3 long months for us. But I think these boys will learn a lot. From that, they will learn about resilience, they will learn about effort, they will learn about going in the limits. So I think a very difficult experience for the boys, but a good experience for the future.
I mean, I think I'd phone in sick for the next 3 months. We're going to get our asses handed to us for the next 3 long months. I wish it was July so I could have my 3 favourite players back. Are you thinking, what is this?
I know, you just think, it's not even a case of creating a siege mentality where then he's going into the change room, because how do you come back on that? As a player, you'd be thinking, wow, that's incredible. And it's like, you just think how charming he was when he first got that job back at Tottenham, and he's thinking, we've heard all the kind of PR spin that he's changed, he's looked at certain things, and you're thinking he's just reverting to type again. So frustrating. And even before that, he's talking about going into a gunfight with no bullets, and he's talking about the other day about the fourth floor, then the seventh floor is the most. He's normally catch you. That was the longest way of telling everyone that, listen, I'm struggling. We know you've got injuries. Just get on with it. And what frustrates me more than anything, because I still think he's a brilliant manager. There's no doubt in that. But I look at the scenario, say, for example, Chris Wilde at Sheffield United. He's got four centre-forwards there in Sharp, McGoldrick, McBurney, Moussa. They've hardly got any goals between them. And yet they're in and around fifth and sixth. You never hear any of that negativity. All you're hearing is saying, what a brilliant roles they're playing, and they are. They're all four of them are contributing brilliantly for this Sheffield United season. And you just hope at times, come on, just do a little bit of that. Empower your players.
Yeah.
Get them to try and prove you wrong and inspire them. And I don't know, it frustrates me.
Yeah, let me put it to you this way. The Jose Mourinho of 2020 could not have won anything with that attitude with Porto or with Inter.
Well, in terms of certainly with Porto and shocking all of Europe, really. I mean, we look back now at that team that played against Celtic in the lesser European competition. I don't even know what it was called back then.
UEFA, I think.
UEFA. And they win that and you think, wow. And then they win the Champions League the next time and you're thinking, wow, this is incredible. Yeah. So he's so inspiring. Of course he is. And he goes into Chelsea and he inspires a whole new mindset of that club and into Milan as well in terms of that brilliant Champions League win. So you're just thinking, you can't think that this is the way forward. I don't know whether or not he's just feeling a bit of the pinch in terms of everyone talking about that he may be a dinosaur. I don't think that for one moment that he is. But he just, I don't know, he just doesn't, he's certainly not inspiring me watching, and you wonder what he's doing for his team.
I'm starting to wonder about the dinosaur thing. And I know that's kind of sacrilege. No. I usually hate that talk. And you see him on TV and he clearly knows the game. But just his teams at the moment, Spurs and Manchester United, compared to the type of up-tempo, slick football, full of movement, and you know, you want to use the
fancy words,
rotation. Like it just looks like it's slightly of a bygone era. And I know that can't be. He can't not know as much about football. He's watching football all the time. But the teams are just bereft of any dynamism. And even Martin Keown did a thing in Match of the Day, where he just showed Spurs players. And this, by the way, was a Dele Alli on the bench. And like Lucas Moura did all right in the Champions League last year. You know, it's not like he's got nothing. And Keown just picked out passages and trends where it's sideways pass, backways pass. And like the Manchester United fans listening know all about that, trust me. So like where's the dynamism about his play?
Well, in terms of that Chelsea game, but I thought it was more apparent in that Champions League game against Red Bull. I thought that young manager,
Nagelsmann,
Nagelsmann looked like dynamic. His team did, full of energies. Tottenham looked a bit pedestrian, cumbersome. And I know we can look at the fact that they ain't got their big men playing as such, but still.
But that's the dinosaur thing, Gary. Yeah. That's what they're getting.
Yeah, that's what it. Well, listen, of course, that's what it's aimed at. Initially, we're talking about what Klopp's doing here, Pep Guardiola, but there's a new wave of young, exciting coaches coming through. But there's a flip side of that, Joe, as well, because look at Solskjaer. He's a young manager. Frank Lampard's having his difficulties, although he's won all his games against his old mentor as such. But I don't know. I look at that scenario and I think, I still believe he's the top manager. I genuinely do believe that. But I think that you're right. I think he's starting to feel the pinch a little bit, that's something that's continually thrown at him. And he's just letting everyone know, listen, I haven't got my players here. That's the skill of a manager. Produce a team when you haven't got all your best men.
Chelsea played Bayern this week. What did you make of them at the weekend? And Giroud is pushing for a starting place now ahead of Abraham. Abraham's back from injury. So this could be a hell of a fill-up for Lampard if he does something in Europe. They've got Bayern. They're at Stamford Bridge first leg.
That's a tough one. Of course, it is obviously that famous win in Bayern's home ground for the Champions League that time, but this Chelsea's nowhere near as street smart as that, and we've seen it in terms of their inconsistency. At one stage this season, they looked like they had fourth place nailed on, but they keep giving everyone an opportunity. The dynamic changes a little bit with Giroud. I don't think he wanted to play him because he always wants a point of his striker to be able to play on shoulders, running behind. And what that does then is create space in and around that 10 area, that second line of attack for all those brilliant players that they've got. The slight change, and you saw it work really well against Tottenham actually, is that as soon as Giroud gets the ball, rather than look to spinning behind, he comes short and gives you a passing option. Then the runs come from wide and in behind.
And they have players to do that. They've ammunition around them.
They do, and they've done that really well on Saturday, I must say. So that just shows a little bit of tweaking here, adjusting as a coach and trying to get your team through it. So that was impressive. But I know no one ever seems to think that he's a number one striker, but he gets his goals, Giroud, and that was a brilliant strike. It really was.
Yeah, no, it sure was. Well, that would be a really good game. I'm being told to go back to Anfield. Shane Pennington is there.
It's Liverpool 2, West Ham 2, and Liverpool back in the game courtesy of Mo Salah, although he's got Lucas Fabianski to thank in the West Ham goal, really, because the ball came to the left-hand side, Andy Robertson crossed it in, Mo Salah hit the ball firmly enough from around about the penalty spot, but the goalkeeper really should have saved it. He let it go through his hands, through his legs, and into the back of the net. It's Liverpool 2, West Ham 2.
There we go. Normal service restored. 2-2, 20 minutes to go. On Man City, so they beat Leicester. I mean, it's amazing, really, how nothing's at stake. Leicester have their Champions League spot. Manchester City don't. But they do, but they don't. So Real Madrid, they're in the Bernabeu. Eden Hazard, you'd have to feel sorry for him. So he was out for 3 months. He came back against Levante at the weekend and broke his ankle. So he's out for the rest of the season now. So his first season at the Bernabeu, Hazard, a complete washout.
I do feel sorry for him in terms of a contact injury like that, but I don't really feel sorry for him when you hear that he's turning up for pre-season.
Bit overweight.
And way overweight, and you're thinking, come on, will you just have a good summer in terms of get yourself right and hit the ground running at a club like Real Madrid? And that's the frustration, because he's an unbelievable player. He's a massive loss to the Premier League. I think he's one of the best I've ever seen. But he doesn't seem to have that Ronaldo drive in him, does he, in terms of trying to make the best out of his ability?
No, you're right. I think when some people move to Real Madrid, they button down and try to arrive in the best shape of their lives. Others celebrate for 2 months with their mates.
And,
what I wanted to ask you about was Laporte, who came back. It was his first start. He'd had two substitute appearances. Now, I only saw highlights of this game. There was one moment where I saw him try to have a nibble, and he just looked so slow. How long does it take as a defender, former player, to get that sharpness back, that bite? Because he looked like a guy going, oh my God, this is so much faster than training.
Yeah, I genuinely believe that centre-halves are the ones, and goalkeepers maybe a little bit, I know they don't have to run around, but your timing, and you're quite right. I think at centre-halves, at times when you come back, it can feel like the game's like going like that. Yeah. It's just whizzing past you. You don't have that calmness. And you think about him, he just exudes it normally. So he had that heavy touch, and invariably then, Leicester break, put Vardy through 1v1, he hits the post and it's a real let-off. And I don't know, I haven't seen yet, but I know he came off after the hour against City, and I'm hoping now that it's then protecting him.
It is, yeah, he's fine. Yeah. Apparently he signalled I'm wrecked.
Well, listen, I can understand that, because you think about the intensity with Leicester play, the fact that more often than not, Vardy will always make runs off your shoulder. You've got to half stay with him, even if the ball doesn't come. So it'll be a physical test for him. But there's no doubt, Joe. Listen, I genuinely put his presence up there with what Van Dijk does for Liverpool. If he's not there, they're not the same team. Right. Genuinely, they're not. But I do believe centre-halves, more than anyone, take time, because we're bigger men. It takes a lot of time to get that kind of timing right, more than anything. Because the fitness, you can do all that. I'm sure he's hitting his same stats in terms of his running scores and stuff like that. But you just can't replicate the movement you've got to stay with in an actual match.
Yeah, well, the Bernabeu Wednesday, that should be an amazing game. I mean, it's kind of City season. Just to mention this, by the way, I mean, this is for the listeners as much as you to react to, because there's not so much you can say, and neither of us are doctors. But just a really interesting story, you might have seen it today, in the FA, so Northern Ireland, England and Scotland, children from 11 years of age and under, and I sort of say this to you as someone, you've headed your fair share of balls, 11 years and under will no longer be taught how to head footballs during training in England, Scotland, Northern Ireland. This is after a Glasgow University research which showed that former footballers were 3.5 times more likely to die from brain disease than people of a similar age who hadn't played football. Certainly professionally anyway. So joint announcement, the FA, Scottish FA and the Irish FA up north said that there'll be no heading in the foundation phase, which is children basically 11 or under. Now weirdly, and I mean, who am I to disagree, but they're going to allow heading in matches. Their argument is that heading is very rare in youth football matches, so they feel it's responsible. Now, I don't know, you need to be taught how to head the ball before you go ahead in a match, but however, they're saying it's a rarity in those matches. And then from then on, they'll introduce it gradually, you know, under 12s through to under 16s and on it goes. And Niall Quinn was talking about this, because obviously, look, parents obviously very aware of all this, and Niall Quinn was saying that they're monitoring the situation very closely. They're looking at all the studies here. They're following UEFA guidelines, and they're more than willing to act accordingly. But it's just a very interesting change. I mean, I'm not asking you to comment on the rights or wrongs of it, but it's a hell of a change from when you were growing up and you were heading balls left, right, and centre, I presume.
Yeah, but I genuinely think football's changed even at the highest level, that like centre halves don't really head the ball now as much as we would have done back in the day. And
yeah.
I think it's a really positive move. I don't think children should be doing it. I genuinely don't. And I'm aware of what such a cruel illness it is in terms of what we're seeing. And so many people listening will have people who had nothing to do with football and have had to deal with it. I just couldn't bear to imagine what families having to cope with loved ones who are going through that. But I am aware, Joe, and it has been certainly at the forefront of my attention, is that how much I have headed the ball throughout my career and how vulnerable now I am on the back of those stats that you said. I've no doubt, bearing in mind, not just in games we'd have headed balls, but the amounts we'd have headed in terms of getting your timing right.
Yeah.
Waterlogged balls. I know my balls of my generation were far better than the ones of the previous one and what have you. And I'm sure the balls now are a lot lighter than the ones that I headed. But I do think it's a positive. I think in terms of going forward football, a lot more is played on the floor. I still think it's a brilliant skill set. Mm. I still love to see someone who is so dominant in the air. It looks great. I remember in commentary on Saturday, the ball comes into the box. Shane Duffy literally arcs himself back and heads the ball what looked about 30, 40 yards clear, a la Paul McGrath in his heyday.
Yeah.
So I do think it's great to see, but I do genuinely believe that children, certainly in the development stage of their lives, I don't believe they should be heading footballs now.
No. Yeah. That's a tough worry to have for you, isn't it? That's probably not one that you like to dwell on too often.
No, I'm acutely aware of it, to be perfectly honest, in terms of how vulnerable I potentially will be to it, which it's a pretty dark thought as such. But there you go.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, do you feel let down in any way? But the knowledge just wasn't there to the same extent.
No,
the research wasn't there. Yeah.
No, of course it wasn't. And, you know, that's life, isn't it? In terms of we're always trying to learn from our mistakes in every aspect of life, sport, whatever. And I'm hoping now that the football world are able to learn, because you see the horror stories of the generations before me and the struggles that their men have having and the impact on their families. Mm. Like I said to you, I it's heartbreaking to see.
It sure is. Listen, sorry to finish on a down note.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Gary, thanks a minute. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Joe. Good luck, mate. Bye.
Cheers. Gary Breen there. Still 2-2 Liverpool and West Ham, 78 minutes in the clock. I will give you the latest in the League of Ireland in just 1 second.
Paddy Power, as much a part of Irish football as spending a 9-month loan spell at Preston North End.
Welcome back. 2-2 still at Anfield, 80 minutes in the clock. As I speak, 3-2 Liverpool. Perfect timing. Perfect timing. It's Mane who has tapped the ball into an empty net. 80 minutes in the clock at Anfield. It is now Liverpool 3, West Ham 2. Liverpool were 2-1 down in this game, and they've come back to equalise through Salah. Very soft goal, should have been saved, but they equalised through Salah nonetheless. I'm just watching the build-up to this third goal. It looks like Alexander-Arnold, who takes a shot, slips as he takes the shot, and then, sorry, it's Trent Alexander-Arnold who actually puts in the final cross. There's a shot from way out the field. I'm trying to see who hit that. It's probably Gomez by the looks of things. It's deflected, goes out to Alexander-Arnold. He pulls it across the area, and Mane is there to tap it in for the easiest of finishes. Liverpool 3, West Ham 2. That will be Liverpool's record-breaking 18th Premier League win in a row, which is just frightening stuff. The League of Ireland results, by the way, Waterford 0, Shamrock Rovers 2 is a full-time. We have Bohemians now 2-0 up at home to Sligo Rovers. That one about to go full-time as well. Dundalk against Cork tonight. Dundalk, comfortable winners at home. 3-0 at home to Cork City. St. Pat's and Derry City and Finn Harps and Shelburne postponed this evening. Text in from Pete and Mayo. I said it before, Gary Breen is a class act, best pundit around in football. I will not disagree with you, Pete. Very, very good. Great to have him on. So where am I going next? Ah, yes. Okay, Old Trafford yesterday. Manchester United were very good by all accounts. I didn't see this game, but Bruno Fernandes scored a penalty. Martial scored an incredible goal if you didn't see it. Just all the reasons why you think there's endless potential in this guy if he can do it consistently. And Mason Greenwood at 18 smashed in a shot with his left foot. Just ridiculous as well. So not a bad afternoon for Manchester United. We had Stephen Doyle and Brian Kerr in commentary.
Brian Kerr, a pretty comfortable victory in the end for Manchester United. I know we spoke about some of the issues and that kind of thing during the game, but this good run of form United on at the moment, they're up to within 3 points now of the Champions League places. Is there anything, one particular thing you can kind of put your finger on, or is it a case where Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is proving himself now as a really good manager?
I think it's too early to say that. I mean, they're not having a very good season overall. In the Europa League, they're still going, and they should beat Bruges in the next round. But that's their level at the moment. They're playing the Europa League, which they haven't had to put out strong teams in. But yet in the Premier League, they've not been able to beat too many teams. You look, they've lost 8 games out of, what, 27, isn't it? So you're losing 1 game in 3. So not having a great season by any means. On a bit of a run at the moment. But they need to continue that and keep going. I mean, they're in a scrap for 5th, 6th, 7th and 8th place, and maybe 4th. You mentioned they're 3 points behind Chelsea. They're just ahead of Spurs and Sheffield United there out of today's win. Sheffield United are having a very good season, but that's because they've just been promoted this season and they're delighted they've got to 40 points. Spurs are having a very poor season, would be the feeling of most people that are interested in Spurs. Another team that lose a game in every 3, which, you know, top clubs shouldn't be losing a game in every 3. Their target should be losing, our target should be not to lose at all. But if you're losing about, I'd say, 1 in 8, 1 in 9, then you're challenging for titles. But Manchester United are way off that at the moment. But they're having the basis of a good run, I'd say. And today's win was a good win, and it was a convincing win. But they got the break of that disallowed goal for Watford. Watford came out strong at the start of the second half and outplayed Manchester United in that first 12 minutes, I thought. The key turning point was the disallowed goal. Troy Deeney's one from the corner kick from Hughes, which was a very good chance for them in the build-up to the goal. And then for Martial to get the second goal for United not too long after, I'm not sure how many minutes after it was, but it wasn't too long. And I think that knocked the heart out of Watford, and they kind of died a bit after that, and United won convincingly. Great goal by Greenwood to wrap it up, and they probably could have had another goal or two if they'd pushed it on.
There were question marks over Bruno Fernandes and I suppose the outlay from Manchester United, 55 million plus most likely 25 million in add-ons, take him up to 80 million. It might seem a little bit too much for a player of his standard, but to be fair to him today, you know, he looked like he was trying to get forward, getting on the front foot as much as possible. But as we said during the commentary, there was a lot of misplaced passes. So if you're his coach, you're his manager, what kind of work do you do with him over the next few days? What do you encourage him to keep doing what he's doing, or do you try and...
Yeah, I think he's got to adapt to the pace of the game. From the league he's playing in, the Portuguese league, most games Sporting would be involved in, apart from matches with Porto and Benfica probably, and maybe Braga now and again. They wouldn't be under pressure. They'd be dominating games, and he'd be able to float about in that number 10 role and have pot shots and try to play players in. Wouldn't have to defend with too much intensity. He would find the Premier League a lot quicker, a lot faster. And, you know, the role of a midfield player has always been the role of a midfield player. You have to get up and back quickly around the pitch, make tackles, win the ball, pass the ball, keep it well. But you got to run hard. Then if you can get some shots, a goal, and score some goals, that's part of your role. But the basics of the game always are maintained, irrespective of what your position is, whether to play it as a 4, a 6, or an 8, as they call it nowadays, or a 10. So he has got to adapt to that. Today he was able to get away without having to do any defensive work. They had enough, Manchester United, with the two sitting behind them, with Matic in particular playing the defensive role, to, you know, Fred Matic cleaned up, tidied up, kept it moving. He was able to get on with it. And he was quite inventive when he was on the ball. He's certainly skillful. But, you know, you got to... I think you've also got to play the right pass, not always the forward pass is the right pass. You don't always risk the ball by playing a forward and hoping that someone's going to get in and get across or get a shot and goal. Sometimes it's the right thing to keep it and to wait for the opportunity to play that forward ball around the corner. I thought he played it too often today. So you know, he certainly showed ability, showed skill, took the penalty well, be it that it's one that I think shouldn't be... I think the lawmaker should have a little look at that one, where the player does a bit of a hop, step and jump before he kicks it, and the goalkeeper dives with, he thinks his run is going to follow through, and he's watching his body position and his run up, and Foster dived to the right early today, and it allowed Fernandes to tuck it neatly in, down to his left, took the penalty well. United have had a problem, they haven't had a problem getting penalties, they've had more than anyone else, that's their 10th of the season in the league, which is, you know, higher percentage in 27 games, but they've had a problem scoring them. So he scored. I think that's that makes a 5 out of 10, maybe 6 out of 10. But they have had the problem with scoring some of the penalties. So, you know, it was a promising performance, but I'm not convinced. I don't expect him to convince in his first half season. Let's say I think next season will be more important for him.
Whatever about United getting better, and they are on a good run at the moment, Brian, but it always feels like, you know, they're not just they're not a million miles away from the next defeat or the next bad results. Like, what I'd like to know maybe is what the results that they're getting at the moment, how much will that boost the morale and the confidence of players and actually start feeding into, you know, the quality and how good they actually are?
Well, the measure of how good you actually are is your position in the table, I would say, after 10 or 12 games in the league. Then you get an idea. Now, they've played double that, and they're, you know, they've still got, what, 11 games to go after today. Is that right? You know, on 27, yeah, it'd be 11 games to go. So there's a good part of the season still left. But, you know, nobody can dispute their position at the table at the moment. Liverpool are miles ahead of everyone else. They've only dropped 2 points. Manchester United helped that by getting a draw against Liverpool. But they seem to be able to produce the goods against the better rated teams. And, you know, Chelsea performance the other night proved that too. But what they've got to do is have the consistency against others, against Sheffield United, against Wolves, against the more middling teams and the teams near the bottom, Aston Villa. We saw them drawing here against Aston Villa too. So, you know, that's the proof. With your position in the table, the number of points you have, and your overall results, I mean, the last 8 games this season, that tells you that they're short, and they're not good enough, they're not consistent enough, and they're way, way away from where Manchester United were used to being under Alex Ferguson, and they've a bit to do to get. But what they can do in the remainder of this season, I mean, they're still going in the cup competitions, and, you know, they can achieve stuff this season. If they could achieve the fourth place in the league, it'd be very satisfactory. If they could win one or two of the cup competitions, I think that overall would be very satisfactory.
I know there's a lot of talk about the fifth place coming into play in the Premier League with regards to qualification for the Champions League because of Manchester City's possible 2-year ban. But I think we all know they are going to appeal that ban, which means then that the ban will be deferred until the following season. So I think whatever happens, it's going to be top four, isn't it? So with that in mind, are United going to get... Is your good feeling now, will they qualify for the Champions League next season? Because essentially, that's what it's all about for United, to get back to the top table of European football.
Well, they can do it through, which they've done before under Mourinho. Now, they'll have a run for their money. A lot of good teams still left in that this season. But we know that the Premier League is probably... above the standard of the other leagues. I think the German league seems to be in good shape this season. Looking at Leipzig's performance against Spurs the other night, they've looked very good. Dortmund looked good. Bayern Munich. I've been sceptical about the German teams in recent seasons other than Bayern Munich. But I think, you know, the Premier League teams can still have reasonable hope. We had an All-English final recently, you know, Arsenal the final, and Chelsea-Arsenal final. But can United win it? Yes, they could. But could Wolves win it this year? Yeah. So then you're looking at, can they get fourth place? I think it'll be hard push. There's a big scramble for the fourth place. Chelsea are in fair shape, even though United beat them the other night. They came back from that and beat Spurs comfortably enough yesterday. Sheffield United are in that scramble. Wolves are not too far away from it either. So, you know, they can't guarantee it, but they've got two fronts where they can fight at least to get there. I think it'll be an important one. I think it would make a difference if they make a Champions League place in terms of their ability to attract. Manchester United will always attract good players and big-name players. They'll be able to pay the wages, which I think is probably the most important factor. The second most important factor might be, are you going to play in the Champions League next year? But I think it would be a help if they made it. But not, you know, they're obviously not going to win the league, but they could win one of the other competitions.
I just ask you finally about Watford, Brian. I have to say, when Pearson came in, I always felt that they might get out of trouble, because the one thing they do have is goal scorers, and I suppose it's getting those goal scorers going. Your good feeling about them as well, I suppose it's a boost for them to get Ismaïla Sarr back today. He's going to be a key player for them. Would your good feeling now be that Watford could still beat the drop? Or will they?
Well, I don't know. I think they've given themselves a real chance, which is a lot better than the position they were in. When Nigel Pearson came in, they looked like they were trailed off and they were out of touch. But I think most people looked at them and said they've got good players and they've potential to be a very good side. They finished 11th last year. Nobody predicted we're going to have a very poor season this season. They've got a lot of quality. We saw that in the first half today, in the early part of the second half. So they've got a right good chance. I think it'll be tough for Norwich. I think, you know, Bournemouth are around there, Aston Villa around there. There's a few more. Brighton are not far away. I think Newcastle will be all right. They're on 31 points. You know, another 7 or 8 points should be able to get that. Newcastle's home form, they're capable of eking out points. But Watford have, I think they've a very good chance of escaping. And he's done it before. Pearson did it with Leicester before, where they won 6 of their last 8 games a few years back, when it looked like they were almost buried. So I would think my gut feeling is that they'll get out of it.
Very so. Thanks, Brian.
Okay, thank you, Steve.
There we are, the two main men, Stephen Doyle, Brian Kerr, holding court at the touchline at Old Trafford. Brian Kerr in a very fetching camel coloured jacket and blue cap, if you're listening on the radio and you couldn't see the images. So he looked the part, and he'll be back very soon on Off the Ball Sunday. Premier League games coming at you week in, week out, as you should know by now. Liverpool 3, West Ham 2 is where we are. 94 minutes on the clock, 4 minutes of the added 5 have elapsed. So Liverpool have come from behind to win what looks like an 18th Premier League game in a row, which is a record. Back in 1 sec.
Paddy Power, as much a part of Irish football as spending a 9-month loan spell at Preston North End.
Welcome back. 2-2 still at Anfield, 80 minutes on the clock as I speak. 3-2 Liverpool. Perfect timing. It's Mane who has tapped the ball into an empty net. 80 minutes on the clock at Anfield. It is now Liverpool 3, West Ham 2. Liverpool were 2-1 down in this game, and they've come back to equalise through Salah. Very soft goal, should have been saved, but they equalised through Salah nonetheless. I'm just watching the build-up to this third goal. It looks like Alexander-Arnold, who takes a shot, slips as he takes the shot, and then, sorry, it's Trent Alexander-Arnold who actually puts in the final cross. There's a shot from way out the field. I'm trying to see who hit that. It's probably Gomez by the looks of things. It's deflected, goes out to Alexander-Arnold. He pulls it across the area, and Mane is there to tap it in for the easiest of finishes. Liverpool 3, West Ham 2. That will be Liverpool's record-breaking 18th Premier League win in a row, which is just frightening stuff. The League of Ireland results, by the way, Waterford 0, Shamrock Rovers 2 is a full-time. We have Bohemians now 2-0 up at home to Sligo Rovers. That one about to go full-time as well. Dundalk against Cork tonight. Dundalk, comfortable winners at home. 3-0 at home to Cork City. St. Pat's and Derry City and Finharps and Shelburne postponed this evening. Text in from Pete and Mayo. I said it before, Gary Breen is a class act, best pundit around in football. I will not disagree with you, Pete. Very, very good. Great to have him on. So where am I going next? Ah, yes. Okay, Old Trafford yesterday. Manchester United were very good by all accounts. I didn't see this game, but Bruno Fernandes scored a penalty. Martial scored an incredible goal, if you didn't see it. Just all the reasons why you think there's endless potential in this guy if he can do it consistently. And Mason Greenwood at 18 smashed in a shot with his left foot. Just ridiculous as well. So not a bad afternoon for Manchester United. We had Stephen Doyle and Brian Kerr on commentary.
Brian Kerr, a pretty comfortable victory in the end for Manchester United. I know we spoke about some of the issues and that kind of thing during the game, but this good run of form United are on at the moment, they're up to within 3 points now of the Champions League places. Is there anything, one particular thing you can kind of put your finger on, or is it a case where Ole Gunnar Solskjaer proven himself now as a really good manager?
I think it's too early to say that. I mean, they're not having a very good season overall. In the Europa League, they're still going, and they should beat Bruges in the next round. But that's their level at the moment. They're playing the Europa League, which they haven't had to put out strong teams in. But yet in the Premier League, they've not been able to beat too many teams. You look, they've lost 8 games out of, what, 27, isn't it? So you're losing one game in 3. So not having a great season by any means. On a bit of a run at the moment. But they need to continue that and keep going. I mean, they're in a scrap for 5th, 6th, 7th and 8th place, and maybe 4th. You mentioned they're 3 points behind Chelsea. They're just ahead of Spurs and Sheffield United there out of today's win. Sheffield United are having a very good season, but that's because they've just been promoted this season and they're delighted they've got to 40 points. Spurs are having a very poor season, would be the feeling of most people that are interested in Spurs. Another team that lose a game in every 3, which, you know, top clubs shouldn't be losing a game in every 3. Their target should be not to lose at all. But if you're losing about, I'd say, 1-8, 1-9, then you're challenging for titles. But Manchester United are way off that at the moment. But they're having the basis of a good run, I'd say. And today's win was a good win. It was a convincing win. But they got the break of that disallowed goal for Watford. Watford came out strong at the start of the second half and outplayed Manchester United in that first 12 minutes, I thought. The key turning point was the disallowed goal. Troy Deeney's one from the corner kick from Hughes, which was a very good chance for them in the build-up to go. And then for Martial to get the second goal for United, not too long after, I'm not sure how many minutes after it was, but it wasn't too long. And I think that knocked the heart out of Watford, and they kind of died a bit after that. And United won convincingly. Great goal by Greenwood to wrap it up. And they probably could have had another goal or two if they'd pushed it on.
There were question marks over Bruno Fernandes and, I suppose, the outlay from Manchester United, 55 million plus most likely 25 million in add-ons, take him up to 80 million. It might seem a little bit too much for a player of his standard, but to be fair to him today, you know, he looked like he was trying to get forward, getting on the front foot as much as possible. But as we said during the commentary, there was a lot of misplaced passes. So if you're his coach, you're his manager, what kind of work do you do with him over the next few days? What do you encourage him to keep doing what he's doing, or do you try and...
Yeah, I think he's got to adapt to the pace of the game. From the league he's playing in, the Portuguese league, most games Sporting would be involved in, apart from matches with Porto and Benfica probably, and maybe Braga now and again. They wouldn't be under pressure. They'd be dominating games, and he'd be able to float about in that number 10 role and have pot shots and try to play players in. Wouldn't have to defend with too much intensity. He would find the Premier League a lot quicker, a lot faster. And, you know, the role of a midfield player has always been the role of a midfield player. You have to get up and back quickly around the pitch, make tackles, win the ball, pass the ball, keep it well. You got to run hard. Then if you can get some shots, a goal, and score some goals, that's part of your role. But the basics of the game always are maintained, irrespective of what your position is, whether you play it as a 4, a 6, or an 8, as they call it nowadays, or a 10. So he has got to adapt to that. Today he was able to get away without having to do any defensive work. They had enough, Manchester United, with the two sitting behind them, with Matic in particular playing the defensive role. Fred Matic cleaned up, tidied up, kept it moving. He was able to get on with it. And he was quite inventive when he was on the ball. He's certainly skillful. But, you know, you got to... I think you've also got to play the right pass, not always the forward pass is the right pass. You don't always risk the ball by playing a forward and hoping that someone's going to get in and get across or get a shot and goal. Sometimes it's the right thing to keep it and to wait for the opportunity to play that forward ball around the corner. I thought he played it too often today. So, you know, he certainly showed ability, showed skill, took the penalty well, be it that it's one that I think shouldn't be I think the lawmakers should have a little look at that one, where the player does a bit of a hop, step and jump before he kicks it, and the goalkeeper dives, but he thinks his run is going to follow through, and he's watching his body position and his run up, and Foster dived to the right early today, and it allowed Fernandes to tuck it neatly in, down to his left, took the penalty well. United have had a problem, they haven't had a problem getting penalties, they've had more than anyone else. That's their 10th of the season in the league, which is, you know, high percentage in 27 games, but they've had a problem scoring them. So he scored, I think that's that makes a 5 out of 10, maybe 6 out of 10, but they have had the problem with scoring some of the penalties. So, you know, it was a promising performance, but I'm not convinced. I don't expect him to convince in his first half season, let's say. I think next season will be more important for him.
Whatever about United getting better, and they are on a good run at the moment, Brian, but it always feels like, you know, they're not a million miles away from the next defeat or the next bad result. Like, what I'd like to know maybe is what the results that they're getting at the moment, how much will that boost the morale and the confidence of players and actually start feeding into, you know, the quality and how good they actually are?
Well, the measure of how good you actually are is your position in the table, I would say, after 10 or 12 games in the league. Then you get an idea. Now, they've played double that, and they're, you know, they've still got, 11 games to go after today. Is that right? You know, on 27, yeah, it'd be 11 games to go. So there's a good part of the season still left. But, you know, nobody can dispute their position at the table at the moment. Liverpool are miles ahead of everyone else. They've only dropped 2 points. Manchester United helped that by getting a draw against Liverpool. But they seem to be able to produce the goods against the better rated teams. And, you know, Chelsea performance the other night proved that too. But what they got to do is have the consistency against others, against Sheffield United, against Wolves, against the more middling teams and the teams near the bottom, Aston Villa. We saw them drawing here against Aston Villa too. So, you know, that's the proof. With your position in the table, the number of points you have, and your overall results, I mean, the last 8 games this season, that tells you that they're short, and they're not good enough, they're not consistent enough, and they're way, way away from where Manchester United were used to being under Alex Ferguson, and they've a bit to do to get. But what they can do in the remainder of this season, I mean, they're still going in the cup competitions, and, you know, they can achieve stuff this season. If they could achieve the fourth place in the league, it'd be very satisfactory. If they could win one or two of the cup competitions, I think that overall would be very satisfactory.
I know there's a lot of talk about the fifth place coming into play in the Premier League with regards to qualification for the Champions League because of Manchester City's possible 2-year ban. But I think we all know they are going to appeal that ban, which means then that the ban will be deferred until the following season. So I think whatever happens, it's going to be top four, isn't it? So with that in mind, are United going to get, is your good feeling now, will they qualify for the Champions League next season? Because essentially, that's what it's all about for United, to get back to the top table of European football.
Well, they can do it through the Europa League, which they've done before under Mourinho. Now, they'll have a run for their money. A lot of good teams still left in that this season. But we know that the Premier League is probably above the standard of the other leagues. I think the German league seems to be in good shape this season. Looking at Leipzig's performance against Spurs the other night, they've looked very good. Dortmund looked good. Bayern Munich, I've been sceptical about the German teams in recent seasons other than Bayern Munich, but I think you know, the Premier League teams can still have reasonable hope. We ended up, we had an All English final recently, you know, Arsenal the final and Chelsea Arsenal final. But can United win it? Yes, they could, but could Wolves win it this year? Yeah. So then you're looking at, can they get fourth place? I think it'll be hard push. There's a big scramble for the fourth place. Chelsea are in fair shape, even though United beat them the other night. They came back from that and beat Spurs comfortably enough yesterday. Sheffield United are in that scramble. Wolves are not too far away from it either. So, you know, they can't guarantee it, but they've got two fronts where they can fight at least to get there. I think it'll be an important one. I think it would make a difference if they make a Champions League place in terms of their ability to attract. Manchester United will always attract good players and big name players. They'll be able to pay the wages, which I think is probably the most important factor. The second most important factor might be, are you going to play in the Champions League next year? But I think it would be a help if they made it. But not, you know, they're obviously not going to win the league, but they could win one of the other competitions.
I just ask you finally about Watford, Brian. I have to say, when Pearson came in, I always felt that they might get out of trouble, because the one thing they do have is goal scorers, and I suppose it's getting those goal scorers going. Your gut feeling about them as well, I suppose it's a boost for them to get Ismaïla Sarr back today. He's going to be a key player for them. Would your gut feeling now be that Watford could still beat the drop? Or will they?
Well, I don't know. I think they've given themselves a real chance, which is a lot better than the position they were in. When Nigel Pearson came in, they looked like they were trailed off and they were out of touch. But I think most people looked at them and said they've got good players and they've potential to be a very good side. They finished 11th last year. Nobody predicted we're going to have a very poor season this season. They've got a lot of quality. We saw that in the first half today, in the early part of the second half. So they've got a right good chance. I think it'll be tough for Norwich. I think, you know, Bournemouth are around there, Aston Villa are around there. There's a few more. Brighton are not far away. I think Newcastle will be all right. They're on 31 points. Another 7 or 8 points should be able to get that. Newcastle's home form, they're capable of eking out points. But Watford have, I think they've a very good chance of escaping. And he's done it before. Pearson did it with Leicester before, where they won 6 of their last 8 games a few years back when it looked like they were almost buried. So I would think they my gut feeling is that they'll get out of it.
Very so. Thanks, Brian.
Okay, thank you, Steve.
There we are, the two main men, Stephen Doyle, Brian Kerr, holding court at the touchline at Old Trafford. Brian Kerr in a very fetching camel coloured jacket and blue cap, if you're listening on the radio and you couldn't see the images. So he looked the part, and he'll be back very soon on Off the Ball Sunday. Premier League games coming at you week in, week out, as you should know by now. Liverpool 3, West Ham 2 is where we are. 94 minutes on the clock, 4 minutes of the added 5 have elapsed. So Liverpool have come from behind to win what looks like an 18th Premier League game in a row, which is a record. Back in one sec.
Paddy Power, as much a part of Irish football as spending a 9-month loan spell at Preston North End.